You're listening to Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Kerbine. I am on the phone with Trish Clifford, who is with the Richmond Rivets out of the community of Richmond, which is north of Oakland, located in the North Bay area around San Francisco. Trish Clifford is one of the people who has not only been very active with the Richmond Rivets as a transition town, but also has put together a PowerPoint presentation for others to be able to start transition towns of their own. So, Trish, thank you for joining us here on Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio.
Thank you.
And I want to start with a question about just what is, because everyone has a similar but a little bit different take on just what is transition for you? How did it come about for you? The whole idea about transition. What does it mean for you to be involved with a transition town movement?
I guess I've always been interested in environmental matters. And as I see things getting worse and worse and wanting to do something about it and feeling like it's so overwhelming and there's so many things that seem out of any one person or any one group of people's control, that finding transition towns and the way they're approaching not only environmental but economic and resource issues today was a very hopeful and positive response to these things. So that really, really attracted me. And also, well, it's based on permaculture principles, which is earth care, people care, fair share. So it addresses, you know, social issues as well as I said, these environmental and other issues.
So permaculture, if I understand it correctly, has to do with making sure that there permanently is healthy soil, that there permanently is something able to be grown in the soil that's nourishing and healthy. Can you expand on that? Am I close to it?
Yeah, well, the one thing about permaculture a lot of people don't really know is it's not just about growing things. It's not just about food.
Oh.
So it's about having food access for everyone, and it's very earth-based. So you look at the way Mother Earth does things, and you try to emulate that. That's not something we've done in our culture, in our society. You know, we do things with a lot of chemicals and not putting organic matter back in the soil. That's an example of it, but like I say, the principles of earth care, people care, fair share kind of encapsulates how permaculture is bigger than just one thing.
Oh, that's a much bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you come to be, now, have you been living in the Richmond area for all your life or for a while?
For a while. I grew up on the East Coast, but I've been in California for, you know, 30 plus years.
Yes. And when the transition town movement came to your awareness, you were living in Richmond at the time. How'd that come about?
Well, you know, I was involved in something called the Awakening the Dreamer Symposium.
Yes.
And this is a wonderful four-hour event, and the goal is to bring forth an environmentally sustainable, spiritually fulfilling, and socially just human presence on this planet, which is just a lovely way in my mind to encapsulate everything that needs to be done and also how all those things are connected. You can't do, you know, just environmental things without dealing with the social aspect and the spiritual aspect. So I was involved with the Awakening the Dreamer symposium, and it's actually those people called the Pachamama Alliance who first brought the transition people over to the United States several years ago to do the first transition town training. Transition town started in Great Britain, and those people are, you know, further along the way, and so they came over, I think it was 2008 or 9, that they came over and did a training, and from there there's well over 100 transition towns in the United States today.
Now, if I understand how that had started in Britain, the United Kingdom, there actually are entire communities that are living essentially off the grid and living free of the use of oil fuels that they've pretty much put the, because that is part of the transition idea, right? It's to anticipate that fuel will keep escalating in price and keep becoming harder to get as the future unfolds. Am I close to that?
Yeah, you're talking about the concept of peak oil, which is very critical to Transition Town. The fact that we're running out of the cheap and abundant fuel that fuels everything we do in our society, you know, our food, our energy, our transportation, et cetera. Looking at and saying as a community, well, what are we going to do when, you know, it gets much more expensive or we just really don't have as much as we need? And coming up with a very positive response to that, that as well as, you know, the environmental degradation of using fossil fuels and the economic disruption, et cetera. It's a very, very positive response in that let's pull together as local communities and see what we can do locally. So, you know, if you don't know anything to do but get your food from the grocery store, which comes from typically 1,500 miles away with a lot of embedded energy costs, then that's what you're going to do. But if, you know, you have community gardens everywhere and your neighbors have chickens and you have bees, then you do have more local options. So in England, the main town that, or the town that started is called Totnes, and they are very far along. They even have a local currency because, as I say, transition towns look at everything, not just food, but energy, water, transportation, health. How are we going to do all of these things when we need to do it more locally?
Mm-hmm. And that may be a necessity to have local currency and barter systems of exchange and things like that, because you can't always count on that everything will be functioning all across the board, including the economy.
Exactly, exactly. And another, you know, a nice byproduct of this, a very positive byproduct, is that it gets communities together, and it's really more a more enriching life than kind of the isolation that we have a lot in society today. So it's the way things used to be. People used to get together and they used to, you know, help each other out, and they used to share tools and they used to share services. And so it just, it's a, like I say, a very positive response.
Wow. Is that some of the stuff that you're doing with Transition Richmond, the Richmond Rivets?
Yeah. Like one of our main projects is our seed lending library. So in our public library, we have a place where people can go and, quote, borrow seeds. And what does it mean to borrow seeds? Well, it means that you can get seeds for free, and then you grow them out, and we have classes to teach people how to do that. You grow them out, let them go to seed, and then you return the next generation of seeds to us, to the library. So over time, we'll be not only self-sustaining, but we'll have locally adapted varieties. And this also speaks to a lot of... Transition Town started with food-based projects because it's a great way to get people together, for one thing, and it's very essential to what we need is food, and everyone can relate to that. But it also speaks to this reskilling aspect of Transition Towns. One of the big steps is we've lost a lot of the basic skills that the human societies have always had. In the last couple of generations, we've outsourced things like growing food and how to save seeds and how to grow seedlings and those kind of things. So we really need to get those basic skills back.
There was a time when most people were farmers.
That's right.
And most everybody had a spot where they were growing things. We seem to have a lot of lawns. Is that part of what we're going to get into also? I want to find out one more thing before we go any further. Which is, how did you arrive at the name Richmond Rivets?
Richmond Rivets, yeah. Richmond as a city, as a town, had a very big presence during World War II. There was a lot of shipbuilding here. We built a lot of Liberty ships. And, in fact, the Rosie the Riveter National Park is here, based in Richmond. So Rosie's kind of a presence in Richmond, and we really like her can-do spirit and the way our community pulled together during the war to face this, you know, big issue. Rosie's kind of our mascot, and when we go out and do tabling, things like that, we kind of put on the bandanas and the overalls, let's get together and get our hands dirty and work together. So that's kind of our theme.
That's why we came up
with Richmond Rivets.
Poster of the burly, buff woman who is rolling up her sleeves and saying, "We can do it."
Exactly.
Okay.
We can do it.
That's Rosie the Riveter. Very good. And there's a park in honor of her.
Right.
In Richmond.
Right, in Richmond, yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, getting back to the food, is that part of the activity that the Richmond Rivets are involved in, not only the seed bank, but also actively promoting the local growth of food.
Yes, yes. You know, another thing about Richmond is that we have an extremely supportive city government. We have a mayor from the Green Party, I think it might be the biggest city in the country, 100,000 we are plus, that has an actual Green Party mayor, and she has a majority on the city council. So, as I say, the whole city government is very supportive of especially urban agriculture. In fact, we had an urban agriculture summit back last year, and we also have an urban agriculture group going. We do things like the city has given over a greenway that we have to a local group called Urban Tilth, a wonderful group that does urban agriculture in the schools. And they also have work parties, and they kind of farm this greenway. And it's open to everybody. Everyone can, you know, get food from it, and they can, you know, help to garden there once a month. So then they train youth how to do that. So it's a wonderful program. That's just an example of some of the many things that Richmond is doing on the city government. And we do a lot of projects with the city government. If they want to have a compost giveaway or something, they'll invite a lot of community groups, and we'll set up tables and give away plants and information and things like that.
So the Transition Town organization, Richmond Rivets, is invited to take part in things and also initiates things that the city gets involved in as well. So there's...
That's correct. Yeah, it goes both ways.
And I'm tempted to use the word cross-pollination since we've been talking about seeds.
Sure, sure. You know, like, transition towns are very... Because they're, you know, super local, it looks different in every single town, because every single town has a different resources, different population, different demographics, different city government. And so you do things differently depending on what you have locally. So because we have such a supportive local city government, we interface with them earlier than some other transition towns might have.
Which sounds like a really positive thing.
It's really great.
Especially with local government like that.
Mm-hmm.
That it keeps things with a local focus and a local perspective.
Yeah, at a certain point, you know, in order to go down the transition path, you do have to engage the local government, because there's only so much you can do as a small group of people working together. Because, you know, if you're going to really cut down on your fuel costs, well, you need walkable, bikeable cities. You know, the city needs to help you with those kind of transportation issues.
Is there... When I think about the times that we're in right now, that there are people who are being foreclosed out of their homes, things are happening in the economy, and I look around, it looks as though part of what transition is set up to accomplish is starting and to help out with, you know, to help people become stronger, more Rosie the Riveter oriented toward rolling up their sleeves and helping each other out and causing food to be available where maybe it wouldn't have been otherwise under the old system. And I look around and I see that the need for transition is already starting to happen, where people can still get gasoline at the pumps, but the price keeps going up. And there are places in our communities where people really are needing food. And it's something where that local growing of food and supplying of food, it looks like it's starting to be needed now already. What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, that's really, really true. For instance, well, here in Richmond, and another really neat thing we have going is that we have this Bay Area Rescue Mission, and they, you know, feed homeless people and have some people living there, et cetera. And, well, they've teamed up with a local local business, actually, that grows organic seedlings but has some land that lets them farm that land and grow things for their kitchen. So
wow.
Those kind of connections are being made. And like I said, the food on the greenway is accessible for anybody. Anyone can go pick some greens or some berries or whatever. But, yes, it definitely is more food growing is necessary.
Well,
and healthy food, too.
Yes.
A lot of people don't have access to healthy food. One of the wonderful things that Urban Tilth has done sponsoring these urban agriculture classes in the high schools, both local high schools that have gardens, as the students are learning about these food issues. And they did a presentation to the city council, and they did a map, you know, using Google Maps, showing that many, many people in Richmond live in what's called a food desert, meaning they don't have access close by to healthy food. All they have is liquor stores where they can get chips and things like that. And so these are issues, you know, health issues that the city's trying to address as well.
And what is Urban Tilth?
Yeah, Urban Tilth is a nonprofit in Richmond that that sponsors a lot of wonderful programs teaching youth how to garden, managing several large gardens in the city. As I say, they sponsor the classes, they help with the classes in the high schools, et cetera. They do lots of good work.
And what are some of the other things? When you look at that whole concept of reskilling, which is learning to handle the skills that will be needed more as we transition away from the fossil fuel world and the fossil fuel economy and into a world where things need to be more self-sufficient, need to be built to last. What other kinds of reskilling do you see that are needed, and how can communities rise to that need?
So, there's, for instance, there's in the transportation area, there's a local group called Richmond Spokes, which is a bicycle co-op, and they again train youth how to repair and build bicycles. So that's a reskilling thing, because you know bicycles are a really good mode of transportation.
It would seem so.
That's another one. Another activity we have going is co-ops. So how to start a business that are worker-owned cooperatives, so people have more power over their jobs. Our mayor and some of the city people recently went to Mondragon, Spain, which is a place in northern Spain that's been operating with worker-owned co-ops. Almost all the businesses in the city, in that area of Spain, have been co-ops for like 50 years.
It's quite a fabled place. I've heard that it's quite a fabled place as far
yes.
as...
It is. Economically, it's doing very well. There's some really worldwide products that are being made from that. And that whole idea of worker-owned really fits with the social justice piece of all of this. You know, like when people own their companies, they're part of owning the company that they're in, you know, they're much more motivated, things are much more fair. It's not about, you know, greed. It's about helping everybody. We have a co-op effort here in Richmond too, and they recently had a class on how to start a small business. So training people in those kind of skills as well.
So it creates a new economy.
Correct.
That's localized, and that has that aspect where it's instead of people being utilized as labor, they actually have a stake in how the business operates. A stake in the business's future. So that's the co-op model, right?
Correct.
And
yeah.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, if they came back from Mondragon and they are at least schooled or started to be schooled on the local level, and this is your local government? This is like the local city government did this?
Yep. Richmond City Government. I mean, it's so funny because a lot of what people know about Richmond is only about the crime. That's all you hear about, and that's the only time we get any kind of press is when there's and you know we have a diverse population and we have a lot of poor people indeed, and so we do have crime, although that has been getting better over the last years. But Richmond is doing all these other things that most people don't know about.
That is really something.
Mm-hmm.
What I have seen from South Bronx. And having talked to some people there, they have been in really conducting a renaissance of many neighborhoods using the co-op model, setting up, in fact, incubating cooperative businesses out of scrap yards. I mean, there are co-op scrap yards, there are co-op rebuilding things. So what's your view of Richmond's future as far as that kind of activity goes?
Yes, that's a wonderful model, the Sustainable South Bronx and what they've been doing, you know, beekeeping on the roofs and all that good stuff. Certainly see that as a great potential for the direction that Richmond wants to go.
And so as far as the – well, let's being on the subject of the direction where you'd like to see Richmond go, and I'm talking to Trish Clifford with the Richmond Rivets, which is the Richmond version of a transition town looking at creating communities, brand new communities in a way, that also look to the past, some of the skills out of the past, so that we can go into a future that is non-reliant, that is apart from depending on fossil fuels for everything to operate, and really using human operating and humans working together. So what do you see going forward in the future? What's your vision look like?
Well, continuing on this path, you know, and bringing in some more of the things that need to be looked at. Like, water is a really, really important issue, especially in this area of California where you have 9 months of, you know, essentially drought. We get all of our water in a few months of the year. And so that makes gardening tricky, you know, if you want to be really water-wise. So looking at water, you know, how you can kind of sequester water in that when it does come into the land. So that's a big issue, certainly more on transportation. And also this alternate economy, which is really great. There's something called the Bay Area Community Exchange, which is a database that's already set up. It's just online, and anybody can go in there and create their own little corridor in there. And so where people can put in an hour of time. You can trade an hour of time for an hour of time. So I give you a massage for an hour, but then I can go get an hour of gardening from somebody else. So it, each service is worth the same amount, and you just rack up hours, and you can spend them anywhere else in the database that you want. So it's not a, you know, one for one, but it's a really good model for starting to have an exchange economy.
And it's called the Bay Area Exchange.
Community Exchange.
Community Exchange.
BACE.
BACE. And it is a type of time bank, then, it sounds like.
Yes. Yes, a time bank.
And that is right. And there are time banks that have started in a number of different communities. So let's see. You have the time bank. You have the seed library. You have a greenway that is serving as a community garden or community farm, even. Projects underway for water reclamation, or not reclamation, that's dams, but water conservation and water enhancement for, let's say, just having really great soil that stores water, I guess, is one way. You're talking about permaculture, I guess.
Yeah.
And you have...
And these are all various groups that are doing these.
Right, right. Oh, it would be a lot for one person to do.
Yeah, right. Well, another program that Rivets has also is called Two Steps a Month, which is an emergency preparedness program. You know, living in earthquake country, it's really important. And that's one way to bring a neighborhood together, too, is to prepare for earthquakes. And it's pretty overwhelming to do that, to even think about it, you know. So this is just an online website where it takes you through preparing two steps a month. You know, just do your emergency plan and get a little pouch of supplies together for this month. And the next month you do your water plan and something else. So it's kind of a manageable way to get yourself ready, and has community tips on how to do that in community as well.
And it sounds like the kind of thing that may be inexpensive relative to how much it could cost to get your food supplied put away and water put away and try to do it all at once. This sounds
right.
like a way that could maybe save people money in terms of
yeah,
how
they it's
do
less
it.
Overwhelming, and you can do things like buy supplies together, you know, as a group and save money as well. Plus, if you're doing it together with a group of people, you're more likely to do it than if you're on your own, you know.
And what is that called again?
Two steps a month.
Two steps a month. That
yeah,
is
two, the number two, steps
right.
a month.
Great. And how can that be accessed? Is there a website for that? Or
yeah, that's the website, twostepsamonth.org.
Twostepsamonth.org.
Yep.
And is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners about what the Richmond Rivets are up to, Trish Clifford, and where things are going in the Richmond area, or even the Greater Bay Area? I mean, yeah, you have a couple of words about that?
Sure. Well, one other thing that we're doing, and a lot of other several of the local transition towns are doing, is called a crop swap. So where people get together and bring their extra food from their garden, because you know when you have too much zucchini, right?
Right.
So you can go to a crop swap and you can swap your zucchini for somebody's apples. We have one of those going in Richmond. Well, we've suspended it for the winter because there's not that much out there, but
right.
We'll be starting that up again soon. And Berkeley has a very successful one that they've kept going all year because they've added food, not just food, but clothing and books and other things that people are swapping. So there are a number of active transition towns in the Bay Area, which is great, and we interface with them a lot. There's one in Albany, one in Berkeley, one in San Francisco. The San Francisco one has used our processes for our library, and I should say that about our seed library. It's made to be an easily replicated process. So we have all of them online. We have how we did our process, forms for setting up things, all the ways to do it, and over 30 libraries have consulted with us on how to set up other seed libraries. So, yeah, sharing of information and interfacing with other groups doing similar. And I have to say, a lot of groups are doing work very similar to this, but they're not called transition towns.
Oh, okay.
One called Bay Localized, which is doing fabulous work, and we use some of their tools, and we interface with them as well. It's very exciting and very dynamic and very wonderful to work with all these people who are working towards the same common, very positive goal.
Is there something, if a group wants to become a transition town that is modeled after, for instance, the Totnes in the UK, is that a official designation where you need to go through a certain amount of types of training and be designated, or is there some kind of official credentials that you have to get from
yes,
the larger group?
Yes, there's a website called transitionus.org.
Yes.
And that's actually up in Sebastopol. But that's the place to go. There is actually a form that you can fill out. First, you can start out being what they call a muller, a group that's mulling it over.
Mm.
And you can register on the website as a group that's mulling it over. But then there is a form to fill out if you want to become an official transition town. And it's not too onerous, but it just means that you're really committed and you really have a group of people and you're going to start doing things. And there's lots and lots of good resources on that website as well.
Is there also training firsthand, one-to-one, available through Transition US?
I don't know one-to-one, but they do occasionally have these transition trainings like the one I described earlier about how to set up a transition town and what exactly it is. And they just had one recently, I think, up in the Sebastopol area, and they do occasionally have them all over the United States.
Yes. There was one that was just in Santa Rosa. We talked to Scott McCune, who was one of the organizers of that. Actually, he was the head trainer. So that was very informative. That was very, very informative. And I understand that the training was for those who were serious about getting started in their communities.
Correct, yeah.
So there are resources, and among those resources, of course, is the PowerPoint that you developed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that something that you would encourage people to take a look at as well?
Sure, yeah. And that is available on the Transition US website.
And that is,
or at least it was. I haven't checked lately, but I think it is available there. So, and again, sharing of information. Anybody's welcome to take a look at that, modify it. I modified it quite a bit for Richmond because, in the end of that, I want to put in pictures of what we're doing in Richmond. And so, take it and run with it.
Absolutely. And so, there it is. The informational place to go is, if I understand correctly, is Transition US. That's TransitionUS.org. Am I correct with
yes.
that? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you can get started finding out further information and how to start mulling it over or diving right in, it sounds like.
And another wonderful thing about that website is, like, as I said, every transition town has its own personality, and there are so many different interesting things to do. I mean, it's just an idea market there. You know, you look at what other transition towns are doing, and, you know, most of them have a website, and say, oh, that's such a good idea. That would work here. I'd like to do that. And since it's the whole world, we have to transition everything we're doing. Like, some people might want to be focused on the economy, some people on food to start, some transportation. There's all sorts of examples of all of those things out there.
It's about being there for each other.
Yeah, that's, you know, the one of the most wonderful things about this is the community that you create and how much richer your life is when you're in community with your neighbors, and can't say too much about that.
Well, Trish Clifford, I want to thank you very much. Trish Clifford with the Richmond Transition Group called the Richmond Rivets. I appreciate you sharing the information with our audience on KBBF FM and also being on Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio.
And thank you, Daniel. It's been a pleasure, and you keep up your good work as well.
Thank you. We can do it.
Okay, we can.
Have a good afternoon.
You too. Bye-bye.